This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
What's up, Hammer?
What's going on, gentlemen?
How do you think the Kings going to survive this next little stretch without Domas?
You know, they're just so much better prepared to survive it now than they were, you know, a month ago. So I think they'll do okay. You know, again, I think, you know, learning to play with Domas isn't super simple, right? We're talking about a big man who controls so much of what's happening on the floor. And the only other big man that plays like him is Jokic. So, and then all of a sudden there's a different kind of need for a big man. And now we're seeing what that looks like. And so the Kings are better equipped to deal with it than when they had Alex Len as their backup center.
That's facts. The other aspect of Valanciunas that maybe, you know, people don't take into account is he's a backup center on this team. This is a guy that started his entire career basically four playoff teams, four winning teams. I felt like this is the first year he didn't start, because he started last year in New Orleans as they made the playoffs, and then he might have started in Washington. I don't know.
There's one other year.
Toronto, maybe?
It's actually Washington.
No.
He didn't start in Washington. He has started. He was the starting center for every team he's played for.
Yeah, he started 839 out of a possible 914 games over his career.
So that's, you know, this is who you're talking about stepping in. This isn't a foreign concept to him, or it's not something that is just too much for him to handle. Like, now he's at a different point in his career, so who knows if he can, you know, handle that. But it's not like, oh, I don't know what to do with them lights of starting or anything. Like he's back at home. For all we know, like, yeah, I'm used to starting. I'm used to playing against number one centers on a nightly basis. So that'll help them until Sabonis is able to come back from the injury.
Yeah, I also think, you know, you don't need to ramp him up all that much. He played 20 minutes a night for Washington. He hasn't played quite that many for the Kings. But, you know, you're going to need him for 27, 28 minutes a night at a minimum. And then you're going to need to see, you know, some minutes out of Trey Lyles at that position as well. I think this also opens a door for Trey Lyles to get right and kind of get his rhythm back, play extended minutes, you know, maybe get to see, you know, a good 20 minutes on the floor every night while you're trying to get through this stretch. And then I also just love the idea of bringing Scalabrine here and giving him an opportunity, whether he's going to get to play or not. You know, this is what a good team, a good franchise should do. They should reward somebody who's stuck around for the last 2 years at the G League level, making pennies on the dollar, and who can, you're rewarding a guy to have him come up and play like the actual, to play with the main team. And I think that's a good thing.
How big of an issue, Hammer, is the kind of playmaking part of this, because we know Domas isn't just a rebounder and a, you know, scorer. He's kind of the hub of everything. And we go back to, I think it was Levine's 42. You were quick to point out, I'm perfectly fine with the way that this went, because Domas controlled everything really in the first half, first quarter. Like, everything went through him. Well, now that's missing, and I don't imagine they're going to throw Jonas Valanciunas into that role. So how do you think the Kings offense looks without the hub there?
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about, you know, the DHO game and how it's just like inverting the pick and roll, right? It's the guard no longer has the ball. Now the big man has the ball, and he's feeding guys all over the court. I think they'll be okay, because I think most of these players are used to playing with a more conventional center. Again, like Vucevic is a player that both DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine have played with for the last couple of years. And they're just going to find it way easier to play with a guy like that. Look at Jake LaRavia. He just came from a system where, again, he's playing with Zach Edey. And, you know, it's all based around Zach Edey. Now, some of the Kings players, they're going to have a little bit more of a difficult time, maybe. But not really. I mean, because look, Keegan has become like more of just a catch and shoot set shooter, and he should still get plenty of those looks. Malik Monk can play with just about any big, I think. You know, he's been in a shooting slump. But outside of that, you know, I think he'll be fine playing with Valanciunas. And then the rest of the guys, you know, whoever's getting minutes here and there, whether it's Keon or, you know, Trey or whatever, they're just going to have to adapt on the fly. And I don't think it's going to be a long period of time here. You know, I think there are a couple of indicators that are really good for Sabonis. And first and foremost is you signed Scalabissiere to a 10-day contract. And that means that he'll be available for the next 3 or 4 games, right? And so you're just trying to buy a little bit of time with a reserve. I also think it's a good sign that, you know, we're going to have more, we'll have an update on him in a week. And it's a grade 1 strain, so it's like a very, it's a mild strain for sure. And then that just means that there's not a lot of damage done, that there isn't like a major strain or like, you know, he's not going to have to start over like square one with this hamstring injury. He didn't have a tear, all that stuff. So we'll have to see how quickly he recovers, but you kind of see this coming for a couple of games. Like, he kept grabbing at that hamstring, and you could see that there was an issue.
We all know Sabonis is just a better player, right? Like, nobody's taking that away from him. But what are some of the things that you think will be a negative with Sabonis out and Valanciunas in there? And I only bring that up because I feel like Valanciunas can do a lot of things similar or in a positive for the Kings while he's out there. He's a good rebounder. He's a good offensive rebounder. He can finish around the basket. But what are some of the things that, like, you're going to miss Sabonis not being there with JV being in that spot?
Well, I think the biggest thing outside of passing, I mean, that's clearly what you're going to miss, is like the ability for you to run most of your offense through Domas. The 3-point shooting that Domas has shown this season, we saw Valanciunas hit a three, I think last game or the game before. Mm-hmm. And it was a surprise because he doesn't really shoot many. But I think the biggest thing that you're going to miss is in a game like tonight's game, where, you know, Dallas likes to go pick and roll heavy and then get switches with Kyrie and then take advantage of the switch. Domas has done a really good job of coming up and shocking the ball handler, like trapping, running two men at the ball handler like Kyrie and getting the ball out of his hands. And he doesn't pick up a lot of fouls that way, which is surprising because he picks up a lot of fouls like sneezing. But for some reason, when he's showing on a ball handler like that, he hasn't picked up a bunch of fouls. And I just don't think Valanciunas is quick enough to go out and defend way up high on the perimeter and try to take the ball out of somebody's hands. So I think that that's one way where you're going to miss him. But I do think that you're going to have better rim protection. And the other thing with Valanciunas is nobody wants to go inside when he's standing in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just a brick of a wall. And people who run inside know that they risk, you know, getting knocked down and risk not feeling good. And so they avoid the middle of the key when Valanciunas is on the floor. as opposed to Domas, who, you know, he's not a shot blocker, but he does defend like a shot blocker would. He goes up and swings as if he's going to block shots, even if he doesn't, you know, block that many. Good position defender, but I would even like lateral quickness and everything else. Domas is just a much quicker player.
Saturday's win, one of the more impressive ones for the season for you this year, given the circumstances of Domas going out 76 seconds into the game?
Yeah, I think it was. That was a really, really good win. And so for me, you know, we kept hearing, oh, well, they beat Houston twice this season. But they didn't beat Houston with the team they have now. And I mean, there's so many changes that have happened structurally to this team since the last time they played Houston. And I was super impressed that they match physicality. I was a little surprised that, you know, like a guy like Cam Whitmore didn't play. But again, that team is so incredibly deep, so it's tough for everybody to play. But I think Houston could have used more physicality on the court. And look, anytime you're looking at the standings and you look at the games ahead, I think that that's one of the games that I had circled and said, okay, that's going to be tough to get in Houston, you know, on a 4-game road trip. And, you know, you look at the games around it, the games around that Houston game were a lot easier. And if you were going to have like sort of a slip up here over this stretch of games, it would probably be against a team like Houston that beat you 4 times last year and is a good, you know, 5 or 6 games above you in the standings. So, yeah, I do think it was one of the more impressive wins, especially during the Doug Christie era.
Yeah, I was really impressed with how they were able to, in the moment, put, you know, whatever distractions were going on with Sabonis not being there, deal with the physicality of Houston and not only win that game, but they had the lead dwindle down to nothing, lost the lead, but battled back from that and were able to kind of win it going away a little bit. So that was extremely impressive, that performance on Houston. And I'll ask you, James, did that win in Houston, did it maybe raise an eyebrow for you about what this team could be down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. But, you know, we need to see more, and we need to see what they look like for a full game when you're game planning with no Domas. You know, like losing a piece like that, such a central figure in what you're doing, isn't going to be easy. So, yeah, very, very big, you know, like each one of these games as we start to build towards like that long homestand where they have like ridiculous back-to-backs and stuff. Like every game is super important. And so I would like to say that, like, maybe you think that they could win, you know, like 45, 46 games. But again, look at the strength of schedule. It's the second worst in the NBA. And, you know, it's not going to be easy. So you got to pick up wins when you can. And especially against teams like Houston, who, like, let's be honest, Houston is that young team that was way up high and is starting to come back down to earth a little bit. And that doesn't matter. They still have a ton of talent, but you were able to get through them, and that was big.
It felt like a complete team effort. There wasn't a Zach LaVine performance. There wasn't a DeMar DeRozan, you know, Dallas Mavericks throw the team on your back performance, help, you know, get some help from Malik in overtime. This was a game, the games that I feel like are so impressive. The Boston one without De'Aaron, anytime you could beat the Celtics, that's a big deal. The Minnesota one right after the De'Aaron Fox trade, I thought was just a phenomenal performance from everyone involved. And then you've got this one where you lose Domas so early into the game, and Valanciunas just steps in, gives you big numbers across the board. And it was something that didn't feel like, as we were looking at the box score, there's nothing, you know, that there's nothing abnormal about it. Like Keegan had like 13 in it. You know, you got 20 from DeMar, 20 from Western Conference Player of the Week, Zach LaVine. And it was just like, hey, this is a sustainable way of playing for this team. At least it feels like it.
No, I agree. And I think they left some things on the table too. Like again, Malik is struggling. Malik is trying to figure things out, like being the starting point guard. And Keegan Murray scored 11 in the first half, but didn't get another. He only got 2 more shots the rest of the game. They're still like, they're leaving so much like low-hanging stuff sitting there where you're just like, hey, look, if you guys want to get better, you might want to hit the guy who's shooting 40-something percent over the last 20 games or something, and Keegan. Like, they're, you need to, like, share the ball a little bit more still. But overall, like, a win is a win. We talked about that before. And I think that this team, you know, they have so many scoring options. They have, you know, and that's fine. But, like, they still have to figure out how to consistently get stops. And I feel like overall as a team, they are getting better. The more efficient their offense is, the better their defense will be. And we're seeing these things play in together. And they're just learning each other. And that's why you're kind of hoping that, that Domas isn't out that long, because you still need this group to, like, simmer in the pot together and really figure each other out as a group. And having him miss time right now, it might not be like the end all be all because you've got Valanciunas, but it also, like, takes a step back in your development as an overall group because you don't have that guy there for, you know, a week, maybe two.
Yeah. You talked about Malik Monk and how he's trying to find his way. I see the same things. I kind of see some improvements, you know, from what it is. I know he had 5 turnovers the other day. We definitely want to get that number down. But just his approach to the game, like, you see his FGAs, his field goal attempts, maybe stay consistently in the 12, 11, 13 range, because he's trying to work the ball, and he's trying to work the ball around to other guys and be that facilitator, be that point guard. And it's a fine line to when you are playing that facilitator role and when they need your offense. And I see him working through that. I feel like he's moving in a positive direction with that. But what do you see from Malik Monk?
Yeah, I think Malik is definitely the guy who is who has been impacted the most by De'Aaron Fox's absence. You know, he's not a natural, true number one starting point guard. And that doesn't mean he can't become that or that he isn't a very good distributing guard. But, you know, he came into this season playing, you know, the first year in Sacramento, I think, is 22 minutes a game. The second year in Sacramento is 26 minutes a game. And all of a sudden, he's averaging almost 35 minutes a game. And we're seeing some of the pitfalls of that. You know, and I think it would have been different if Malik would have taken over as a starter or as a starting point guard at the beginning of the season, had training camp, had all that stuff to go through. But at this point, the three of us, we've discussed this in past years. Malik typically has a point in the season where he runs out of gas, and his field goal percentage and his 3-point percentage takes a huge nosedive. And, you know, we talked about it. I remember having this discussion with you guys because it's usually in the conversation about Kevin Huerter. And I would say, yeah, Kevin Herter's struggling, but he's not the only one. There are other people that are struggling, and you could see, you know, the month of January for Malik Monk in, like, you know, 2 years ago, and the month of January last year, Malik Monk usually struggles. And then when you take a player who, again, was averaging 27 minutes a night as a role player, as a bench player, and then, you know, 12, 15 games into the season, you bump him up to 34, 35 minutes a night, you're going to burn through his legs pretty quick. And so I think this is on Malik, like, moving forward. If you're going to be the starting point guard, you got to do the extra work. You've got to do the extra body maintenance work that guys like Domas do, that, you know, for years I talked about what Harrison Barnes does. And you've got to take care of your body in the right way, because the season is a grind. And there's a big difference between playing a 10-game stretch where you're playing 26 minutes a night and you're playing 260 minutes, and versus a 10-game stretch where you're playing 35 minutes a night and you're playing 350 minutes. That's just a huge amount of wear and tear on your body. And I think that's where we're starting to see Malik. Like, he'll bounce back. He'll get his legs again. But for right now, that's going to be a problem. And on top of that, they're not even really asking Malik to be a defensive ball player at this point. And that's another step in, you know, your fitness and maintenance that you have to do on your body, where you can not only run an offense for 30 plus minutes tonight, but on top of that, you can play defense at a league average or above level. And that's where I think, you know, people just miss, like, the value of De'Aaron Fox. The fact that he played in every single game, the fact that he was able to play on both sides of the court for all that time, and some nights his shot's off, some nights it's not. But the defensive side of the ball, he was a lot more consistent than either LaVine or Monk. And these guys, you know, they've got to figure out a way to ramp it up where they can be consistent for 36 minutes a night.
Do you think it's the absence of De'Aaron in terms of like De'Aaron being on the floor and being a playmaker and kind of taking pressure off of him, or and that increasing Malik's load? Or do you think it's the fact that he's basically stepping into the role De'Aaron Fox had, and he has, for lack of a better way of phrasing this, maybe just hasn't been built for that yet in the league?
I think it's a little bit of that. I think it's a little bit of everything. I also think like having your one of your best friends traded in the middle of the season and having it be like kind of a weird situation, that didn't feel good either. And then I'd add in the other component, like, in all honesty, Malik Monk got away with being the third or fourth guy on the team that teams game plan for. You know, you start with De'Aaron Fox, and next you go to DeMar DeRozan, then you go to Domantas Sabonis, and then it was Malik Monk that you're game planning for, right? That's who, and especially if you're going to put your best defenders, your best defender would easily go on De'Aaron Fox. Your second best defender usually went on DeMar DeRozan. And Malik Monk got like second and third guys that, you know, guys that are well down the list of best defenders on a team. And all of a sudden, that's not.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. but that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Not the case. You know, he's out there as the main ball handler. And Zach LaVine draws a crowd for sure, But the guy who you've got to like stop the ball, stop the initiating, is Monk. And so you're going to put one of your better defenders on Monk. And Monk has gone from a position where he was a secondary ball handler and De'Aaron Fox drew a lot of attention to where he is the primary ball handler. And again, it's just an adjustment. It's not that Malik's doing anything wrong. It's just that this is the way it goes when you take out a major, major piece. And again, we can talk about like sort of the transfer between De'Aaron Fox and Zach LaVine and what those two guys, how they play. But you have a different type of defender that you put on both of those guys. There's not nearly as many drives to the basket with Zach LaVine. It's a lot more off ball stuff. And that's way different than, you know, putting a guy, you know, like Davion Mitchell, who, you know, instigates defense from the backcourt on a primary ball handler than you would with a guy like Zach LaVine.
Hammer, we'll come back. We'll step out. We'll come back. We've got much more to talk about. The Sacramento Kings take on the Dallas Mavericks tonight. We'll talk about that. That's a big game. We'll talk about where the Sacramento Kings are in playoff positioning and why that's likely to be very different by the time we go to bed tonight. And that's going to be the case probably for the rest of the season. So we'll talk about all that with our insider from the insiders. It's James Hamm here with D1 KC on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. So I said at the beginning of the show, like I told James, I've got this story to tell him, and I totally oversold it like it's a big deal because it's not a big deal. But it was funny to me. And so my best friend of 30 years decided on Friday, he was like, hey, his birthday is tomorrow.
He's
like, hey, we're going to get together tomorrow night. We're going to get a couple booths and go, you know, step out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Where are we going? So we go to the Mix downtown. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, like, cool. And so I'm trying to prepare. Like I'm Katie's going with me. Katie from the Wake Up Calls, and I'm trying to prepare her for this. I was like, you've never experienced this before. Like we're not even leaving anywhere until 10:30. Like there's no point. Like Io will be there at 11. Io sends a text at like 10 o'clock. Like I'm leaving the Thomas. Hope to be to the Mix by 10:30. Uh-huh. Now I lived in the Thomas. That's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
At top.
So I'm
top.
Not. So I'm immediately like, this stinks. There's no way. So I planned it. I was like, let's get there around 11. Get there. No one, no IO, no party, no nothing in sight.
Yeah.
So we're up there having some drinks.
He's on good time, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's how you want to get to the club.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, for sure.
Yeah.
Except when he tells everybody to get
there. Well, that's the problem with this.
We're sitting here having drinks, just talking, and Katie goes, hey, there's James Hamm. I'm like, no. And I didn't even look. I'm like, no. She was like, no, seriously, look. It's fake James Hamm. And I look up, and I swear to God, there was a fake James Hamm directly in front of me.
Man, we should have got a pig.
So that's where this is where the whole night like goes crazy. We're out celebrating my man's birthday, but we're tracking the fake James Hamm guy. And, you know, Katie does play-by-play on everything. So she's like, look it. Fake James Hamm guy is having the time of his life. Do you think the real James Hamm has ever had as much fun as fake James Hamm? I don't know what James Hamm or James Hamm would wear to the club, but it was almost certainly the exact same outfit fake James Hamm had on. And so I'm like, yo, we've got to get a picture just to prove that I'm out past 8 o'clock because they'll never believe this. We have to get a picture of fake James Hamm so I can send it to the group text. So we're like navigating, then we get over to the booth, we get to the booth, drinks being served, all of this, and we lost fake James
Hamm.
Oh,
no!
We lost him.
He went inside, right?
No, we were already inside.
You were already inside.
Yeah, no, we were already inside.
Wow.
But we lost fake, I swear to you, this guy, he was a smidge, I mean, James is a pretty tall guy, he was a little bit taller than James Hamm. This was fake James Hamm.
fake
Jets. Well, just so you guys know, and so, I've been to the mix probably 500 times more than both of you combined.
Way more than me, because I ain't never been to the mix.
I believe that.
Yeah, because that, like, before it turns into the full-fledged club, it's where all the attorneys go to just get drunk. And of course, my wife being an attorney, like, you have to do all the law firm functions, and a lot of them are there at the mix. So I know, like, the mix after dark, it gets very different. But
James,
yeah, I've been there.
Were you there on Saturday night?
I was not there.
Was
no,
that
I
in
was
fact
in Sonoma?
No, that was that in fact real James Hamm? Yeah,
show me a picture of you in Sonoma. Show me a picture. Call somebody right now.
So then it became, it's like, what's fake James Hamm drinking? It becomes like this whole thing where fake James Hamm is the focus of the night. Like, is fake James Hamm on the dance floor? Does fake James Hamm like Sexy Red and Bruno Mars?
Oh.
You know what the name of Bruno Mars and Sexy Red's new song is, James?
No.
Don't worry about it.
Casey, what's the name of that
no,
song?
No, don't worry about it. James, you look it up, matter of fact, and then you tell me if you want to say it or
listen,
not.
Listen to the Apple Music version when the show is over. It's spectacular.
Every time I go to look something up, it's never good, so I'm not going to do it.
Just know, James, you weren't with us on Saturday night, but you were definitely the focal point of our evening.
That's
fake
awesome.
James Hamm. He needs to make himself known. I need to see fake James Hamm.
I hate myself for not being able to get a picture of this guy.
You should have done like click, click. Oh, look, I'm not taking a picture of you.
I'm not taking a picture of you, perfect stranger. I'm just...
Weirdo.
No, you look just like my friend James Hamm. Come here. Let's just take a picture. Lots of Kings fans in the house for the mix.
Yeah.
Lots of big KC fans. Hey, man, tell KC I said hi.
Why do you always say this? This doesn't happen.
Literally happens everywhere I go.
No, it doesn't.
All right. You won't believe me. I swear to God, this happened. Coming back from the bathroom, this dude there was a wedding party there. Okay. It was popping.
Okay.
My man goes, I had met him earlier in the night. He was like, man, I wish KC was with you. You guys should go everywhere together. Now, admittedly, this was about 1 o'clock, and he had had a couple, but he was just adamant that we have to go out together. So when we're seen, we're seen together.
If I could get Dave out past 8 p.m. again, then we'll make it happen.
Again, I'd like to repeat, it was my best friend of 30 years, and he got me out past my bedtime.
Champagne and a campaign.
Out here acting like young people, man. Boy, I think your boy finally shut down like maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock that
Come
night.
On, man. That's what I'm talking Ooh. About, man. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Y'all play with me.
We've closed the mix down a few times. Yeah.
James Mix
Younger
Hamm.
Years. Yeah. Younger years.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
They got the James Hamm booth at the Mix.
Oh, can I get the James Hamm special, please? Thank you, guys.
Fake James Hamm over to be your server.
I actually had a good time. Can I tell you something we both noticed? It's actually kind of embarrassing. You know that giant mural of Johnny Cash
on the wall, on the building, right?
Yeah, yeah. I never knew that you could see that from inside the mix. I never knew that before. We're like standing there and look up and we go, oh, there's the Johnny Cash mural. Like, I knew it was downtown. I knew, I've seen it a million times. I just never realized exactly where it was.
Yeah, I felt like news to me as well. What's the place next to the mix?
Public house. Public
what
house?
Used to be
no. What is it?
I don't know. Like, you know what it is? No, I just know somebody was in there. Somebody was in there.
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, you do.
From
one of the watch parties.
Oh, Grant, I can't even remember what that place was. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
You could hear a rat pissing on cotton in that playoff party.
Just sitting here like, oh, that was a hell of a play by the Kings there. Just give me some more fried rice.
then he said, like, I'm coming back to Sacramento for the playoffs. Nobody asked you.
You're fine.
Nobody asked for this.
Go away.
It's like Travis Scott. Nobody asked for this.
Why is Travis Scott here? What is he?
Why is Grant here?
Like, of all of the places Grant Napier could have had a watch party, it was right next to ours. And of course, everyone leaves. I'm walking back to the car and walk right by who? All right, man. Whatever. James, your thoughts.
We got D'Lo and KC watch party like this. We got even 1140 watch party like this. And then here's Grant Napier. Like Travis Scott. Yeah, Kings in the playoffs. Yeah, I'm here.
My favorite part about that was Big John Poles walking over there like he was going to whoop somebody's ass. Big John Poles was walking over there like it was about to go down. Like, hold on, big fella. Easy. I was holding him back like he was Jacob. I was like, hey, relax, Fatu. We good.
That was a classic.
James. James, you mentioned the Kings got to find ways to win games. Dallas is a team that is kind of, you know, I've been wondering what direction exactly they're going to go now that the, you know, emotions of the Luka Doncic trade are behind them. The game is behind them. I don't think they play, or they might at the very end of the season.
Yeah, they do.
He goes in Dallas. Yeah, at the very end of the season, they do play in Dallas. So, you know, that's you've got a month before that, like. When you talk about the Kings finding ways to win games, man, this kind of feels like one they need to find a way to get.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest games. I mean, we could keep talking about like the big game of the season, but man, this is an opportunity to really shove a team down that's struggling and to get the season series win and all that stuff. This is a big game, and you know, like Dallas hasn't played particularly well over the last week or so, and this is a gettable game, and this might not have been gettable, you know, a month and a half ago. This might have been one of those games that you cross out, and like the Houston game, and go, huh, I don't think you're gonna win that game. But here we are in the middle of this 10-11 game run here, and the Kings are 6-2 over the 8 games. You got a couple of winnable games and then a really tough one in Denver. Like over this 11 game stretch, they still have an opportunity to go like 8-3. They could even go 9-2 if somehow they sweep these next three games. And then the schedule gets even more ridiculously difficult. But for right now, like this is a game that you have to get. There's not a lot of opportunities against teams like the Mavericks left on your schedule. And if you can push them down into that mix where all of a sudden they're fighting for that 10, 11, 12, 13 spot. And, you know, like in the mix with the Suns and Spurs and all that, that would be a good thing for the Kings. Put one team out of position to be in the running for like a 6-7 spot.
Yeah, man.
Real quick, KC, shout out to my man Castle. He was the one who said we need to go out together.
Hey, Castle, what up?
Appreciate you, bro. We had a good discussion on the Kings, but it started with him telling me we need to be out together.
Shout out to that boy Castle, man. Big ups.
Yeah, they was partying in there on Saturday. Sorry, Casey, go ahead.
Nah, man. Yeah, I look at this the same way, James. I mean, you've built so much good momentum in the last week and a half, and ever since the Warriors game, pretty much, man, you've got a team that's right for the picking right there. Take advantage of it. Like you said, you could push them down. You already got the season series with them, so you know you're good on that front. But get them a full game lower as they're struggling. You know what I mean? So that's one less thing you've got to worry about as far as, you know, even 9-10. Like, say you don't progress, at least you've got these guys. I don't want to say in your back pocket, but because of the tiebreaker and the way they're playing, you kind of got them at 9-10 already. Man, take advantage of it, especially like you said, going into a tough stretch. If you could build the momentum where you laid it out earlier, you've won 6 of 8 or 8 of 11 or something like that, going into that tough stretch that is at home, man, you want to take advantage of all opportunities right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, once you get past the Dallas, Denver, San Antonio like trio here, it goes Clippers, Knicks, Warriors, Suns, Grizzlies, Cavs, Bulls, Bucks, Celtics, OKC. I mean, that's just like the next 10 games is extremely difficult. And like, if you can somehow split the next 10, that would be a mild miracle. So if that's what's going to happen, you need to get yourself at least a couple more games, you know, right here above 500, where you can start to build some sort of cachet. And again, the schedule, it only gets worse. I mean, the Kings have the second worst schedule in the league. And I looked at it earlier. This is wild. Phoenix has a 584 strength of schedule left. The Kings have a 557. And then all the way down at the bottom, Minnesota has a 438. They have the second easiest schedule left in the NBA. And Dallas, you know, has a 503 strength of schedule, like win percentage against. It's not that difficult. They're like 14th in the league. You need to pick up wins where you can, and that's where the Kings are, and that's where they have been for, you know, maybe a month because of how the early season went.
Speaking of the schedule hammer, we got the notice last night that Domas will be reevaluated in a week. You've got Dallas, Denver, San Antonio all this week. Sunday to Sunday, you've got the Clippers game. That's in Los Angeles. And then you're back here the very next night versus New York. We speculated because they have Tuesday and Wednesday with no games, and then it's Thursday night against the Golden State Warriors on national television, that even if things are on the up and up for Domas, we might not see him back till Thursday, March 13th.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Just looking at the schedule, that's what it kind of tells you, that there's a good chance that, you know, that back-to-back, I mean, certainly I wouldn't play him in the back-to-back, right, both games. And if you were going to play him one of them, you'd play him in the second one. But then having two additional days before you play another game, that's probably the smartest move. Now, look, he could recover very quickly here, and everyone's like, hey, he's fine. Like, he's ready to go. But, like, hamstring injuries, and you know, they're not good. And we also, like, I don't know if you guys were watching, like, two games ago, he, like, grabbed his low back. And then last game, the game before he got hurt, he grabbed at his hamstring during the game too. And so you could see sort of like there's a progression here that's going on. And that's not a good thing. You know, he's shouldered the weight of this team for most of the season. And he's a guy who, you know, last year played all 82. The year before that, he played 79. He'd only missed three games coming into tonight this season. So he's going to want to get back out there because that's who he is. He's a warrior. But at the same time, like, sometimes you have to be cautious for somebody, yeah, and hold them back a little bit.
Yeah, he's been an Iron Man of sorts, even with how physical he plays. And we laid out the schedule a little bit too, as far as like the type of centers they'll be going up against. And you don't ever want to lose Sabonis, but in the next 2 weeks, you've got, you know, the Phoenixes, the San Antonios, the Knicks, the Warriors, teams that don't really have these imposing low post centers or anything else like that, that it feels like you may be able to get away with not having Sabonis for 2 weeks, at least in that specific aspect of the game, like going up against another center, because you flip that and 2 weeks after the 2 week mark, you've got Cleveland, you've got OKC, you've got Boston, you've got Chicago, even Milwaukee. These are all teams that have centers that are active out there. So maybe for the next 2 weeks, you might be able to get by with Sabonis kind of healing back up, because you're not, in theory, going up against somebody that could destroy you at the center position.
No, it's a good point. I mean, I think the one downer is that they played Denver, you know, this week. And Denver is one of those teams that you really wish you had Sabonis for. Although I like Valanciunas against him too. And for that matter, I like Trey Lyles against Jokic. Make Jokic work. Make him run around the perimeter and chase Lyles. Or go ahead and leave Lyles open. Lyles can bust you up. So I think that this stretch here without Domas, it gives Valanciunas just a little bit of an opportunity to settle in and for his teammates to learn him better. And it gives Trey Lyles an opportunity to get back on the court, play more consistent minutes, play maybe 15 to 20 minutes a night, and maybe you find something with Trey Lyles again, because you're going to need Trey in the playoffs. You know, especially with most teams going small ball in the playoffs, you're going to need a guy like Trey as much as possible.
You mentioned Scal earlier. We tried to come up with guys because we were talking about, you know, as we talked earlier with you about, like, the facilitating part of Domantas Sabonis. That's something that Jonas Valanciunas probably, it's not a role he's going to fill. And then we've talked about the struggles of Malik Monk and questioned where whether maybe if the Kings need a true facilitator, we see a little more of Markelle Fultz, who we saw a very little bit from in Houston. But as Casey noted, it was like 4 minutes, but he played really well in those 4 minutes. And if the Kings get desperate for a guy who can, you know, run the offense a little bit, that could be a direction you turn to.
Well, especially in a game like tonight where you're going up against, you know, an elite point guard in Kyrie Irving. So I would like to see Keon Ellis play a lot against him. I'd like to see Markelle Fultz play against him. You'll probably start off with Keegan Murray against him. I think Markelle is a player that every time we see him, he does a little bit more. He's turning the ball over a lot, which is going to be one of the problems that might limit his like sort of his play time. You know, I think two of his first three games, he had three turnovers. And that's just because he's rusty and he hasn't played in a while. And he doesn't know his teammates. So I expect him to get a little bit better and sort of settle into maybe a like an 8 to 12 minute per night role. But at the same time, like, it's kind of imperative for Malik to get through whatever he's going through and figure it out. And, you know, again, I don't know if Scal's going to get to play during his 10-day contract here, but I hope so. That, you know, he's a good dude who's put in the time and the work. And, you know, I was mentioning this earlier to Kyle, but, you know, G League players, they make something like $42,000 a year. Like, they don't make anything. And two-way players make half of a league minimum player's salary. And so they make, two-way players make like $700,000 a year. When Scal gets his call-up, he's going to make like $140,000 in a 10-day contract. And that's just like a tremendous boost for somebody who's hanging around at the G League level, hoping for an opportunity like this, but also, you know, he's here to support a franchise that supported him when he was young and to continue his basketball career, but to be a veteran with a bunch of young guys like Isaac Jones, trying to teach him how to be pros and, you know, doing a lot of good work down at the G League level. So it's always good to recognize those guys and to give them like these opportunities when you can.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like if you see Scal, it's either really bad or really good, you know, in the next 10 days.
No, for
like,
sure.
Like you're beating up on some team or you're getting beat up on.
Yeah.
But I like Scal, though. I do like him.
I get why they did it.
Yeah, you have to, because I was watching that game on Saturday, like, because Valanciunas had fouled out the previous, it fouled out like last week sometime. And when he went in the game so early, I was like, oh man, please don't get in foul trouble. Like, you foul out, we ain't got nothing against Sengun, you know, above 6'9" or something like that. So you bring Scal in just for that type of reasoning. James, how are you feeling about this team tonight, man? Like, we kind of went around, but like, how you feel? You think they'll be able to seize the moment, capitalize on some of the momentum they built, and get a victory in Dallas tonight?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think they're playing a really physical and sort of strong brand of basketball, and they're getting better. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You're starting to see guys slowly figure out their roles, slowly start to ease into those roles and figure out how to play with each other. I definitely think this is it's a game that in the standings means a ton. Like, to lose this game would, I don't want to say catastrophic, but you just don't have a lot of games like this left on your schedule. And the way that, like, 6 through 10 are within a half game of each other. That's five teams are within a half game. And if you look, a lot of the teams have more losses than the Kings do. And we're to the point where you're going to start looking at losses. How many losses do you have? And you know, it's fine for another team to have one more win or two more wins than you, but if they've got more losses than you, eventually that will all balance out. You'll run out of games to play, and those losses are going to matter. And so the Kings are in a good position, and they need to string together as many wins as possible.
All right. Well, it's the Kings and the Mavericks. King's got a good little run going right here.
Yeah, let's keep it going, man.
We'll see what happens. But no matter what happens, we'll be back with you tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. With James Hamm, Kyle Mattson, the Insiders. We're going to head over to 102.5. Enjoy your air fryers, everybody. We got the Purple and Black pregame show coming up next here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos Kings, light the beam.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacid. Almacid is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacid. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.